the sound. The song sound even better on Fridays for some reason. Because it's Friday. Here we go. She's Trouble. All right, it is Friday. It's time to be me. You're on. Nate's going to show. Go! So that's what we're going to do on a Friday, on the eve of the Final Four in the Motor City, when all eyes are on Detroit, live from Detroit City. It is the Nancy Skinner Show on Friday. And the number to the program, we had a little, it's so fun to see how the sausage is made, is it not? The number to the program today is the old one. It's 866-991-9927. 866-991-9927 is working. Are we correct, John, today? It's, you know, everything, this is why I can't,
yes, we're correct.
I can't even believe that our president went over in 2 days of the G20 and got a deal done on stimulus and regulation with 20 nations. And, you know, we're trying to build a new studio. We are in the process of, for those who are interested, we're building a whole brand new studio with bells and whistles and all kinds of stuff. And I'm in Clear Channel Detroit Studios right now, doing my show here. And so we got the new number. We were all excited. And, you know, in the transfer, it got transferred over to the new studio. And I'm at the old one. So the phone was ringing into the voicemail box. Our radio, our new studio. So we're working on getting that back. But meanwhile, our old one does work. 866-991-9927, the number to the program. And the other good news is on Friday is my boy toy James Boyce is back with me this Friday for 2 long weeks. I've had to go all by myself anticipating his return while he was in the Bahamas or some Caribbean island. And I'm so happy that James decided to come back to the United States and spend an hour with me and you on the Nancy Skinner Show. Hi, James. James?
Nancy, I missed you.
There he is. Hey, buddy, where were you?
Bahamas.
The Bahamas.
Yeah.
The Bahamas. How was it?
Oh, it was awesome. You know, we go to the outer islands of the Bahamas. I take my kids, and we just snorkel and scuba dive and eat grouper fingers on the beach and do nothing.
Well, that's doing nothing is a good thing, is it not?
Oh, it's amazing. And then the thing was is that I was just happy that you didn't find another boy toy because, you know, the problem is being a boy toy, you can be replaced pretty quickly, but thank you for holding out for me.
Especially with a cougar like me.
Oh, my God. I've seen you in action. You're vicious.
It took unprecedented control to just hold off and wait. No one came and asked John. I had no boy toys on my Friday spot.
Oh,
for the last 2 weeks, and it was tough, but we pulled it off, and you're back. You're back.
Oh, God. Thank God.
So,
not much has changed. The economy's fixed and everything's better.
You know, wait a minute. There's a pattern there. You might not like the way that ends up.
Before
I'm going to get into all these stories, I just want to, for people who are just tuning in, you know, the latest, we're going to keep on top of the story out of Binghamton, New York, as the developments warrant, obviously, a terrible situation happening there at the American Civics Association, with, various reports of numbers of people who may have been killed in that, rampage, and the details are just kind of coming out. So I want you to know that we're going to keep, if you're listening, we're going to keep updating you on that. Ironically enough, when I was a morning host for about 4 years, I was, we were in Binghamton, New York, and Binghamton, New York, and I went there, actually. I should be able to pronounce it because I went there on an affiliate visit. And it's a beautiful area, upstate New York. That whole area is just gorgeous. And it's a lovely small town. So it's kind of shocking to see something like this. You know, it is always small towns. I guess it doesn't happen in huge towns. All right. I'm sorry. John, what are you saying to me? You're talking to me in my ear. What's going on?
Well, we have an affiliate up there in the upstate New York area.
Yes, we do.
I think that everyone's all right.
Yeah, all right. We do have an affiliate. Yes, we do. So if you have any details, feel free to call. So anyways, James, I wanted to get that out. Now, we're going to be keeping people updated on that as we go along. I wanted to ask you, first of all, if you want to talk about the jobless rate hitting 8.5% as March payrolls fall by 663,000 or do you want to talk about the fashion smackdown between Michelle Obama and Carla Bruni? I've got the Wikipedia. I have the Michelle Obama wiki versus Carly Bruni wiki. Which topic do you want to talk about first?
I'll go with the women for 500.
Okay. That's what I'm calling the Desperate First Wives is what I'm calling this segment. First of all,
I thought Michelle Obama looked great. You know, I'm a huge Michelle Obama fan. I thought she looked great.
Well, beyond the actual, because I will get into my own opinion about that, but the coverage of this to me is really hilarious. You know, the reason I said that is you got these jobs numbers coming out, all kinds of the G20 summit, even with the G20. If you're a cable news junkie like we are, James Boyce, by the way, I didn't even properly introduce you for our new listeners.
Yeah, you told everybody that everything they needed to know.
The boy toy on Friday. Besides being my boy toy on Friday, James is one of the original contributors to the Huffington Post, the fabulous Huffington Post, and was a senior advisor to both John Kerry and Bill Richardson, and does Newsletter.net, yes.
Yeah.
Is also the editor there. So, and he's got lots going on. And he's smart, and he's funny, and he's cute. Okay. That's all you need to know. All right, so listen. So, what about the coverage of this and the fascination of the wives, the wives and the fashion? I don't remember. I just don't. When Laura Bush, G20, do you remember anyone even, like, talking about what she was going to wear?
No, but I think if you go back a little further, it's actually before I was born, but, you know, the famous quote of John F. Kennedy is, you know, I'm the man that accompanied Jacqueline Kennedy to Paris. And I think that, you know, Michelle Obama has that level of style. There is that level of fascination with the Obamas that is far, you know, far greater than probably any, the Clintons had it a little bit, but probably since the Kennedys, in terms of the total package of the fascination of the two of them.
Well, I think it has more to do than just the way she dresses. Because you know what? I'm sorry. The dress to me, you like that dress, or with Carla Bruni, you like that dress with the black and all the flowers and stuff like that?
I thought she looked better than Carla Bruni, to be honest.
I do. You know, so do I. I mean, because Carla Bruni's whole thing is she is demure in her attire, and she wears these designer clothes. But it looked like a gray sack to me with the bow, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'm not known for being commenting on women's dressing, but yes, I would agree.
I should hope not. You know what, I have to share, just speaking of that, I have to share a funny story. So I did Fox Business News last night, and, you know, when you do those things, you've seen me when I've been on TV, you come out of makeup with a lot of makeup on, right? And fake eyelashes. And my makeup artist yesterday put these really big these eyelashes on me.
They never do that to me. How come I never get fake eyelashes?
You know what? You should ask for them. Hold out, buddy. You got to hold out for the lashes. So I had a business meeting in our little town, and where we normally, this quiet little place, there's a big Scottish, it was a big holiday yesterday, Tartan Day, with bagpipes and everything. So we had to move it next door, and I ended up in a gay bar with these huge eyelashes. I looked like a transvestite crossdresser coming out of TV in a gay bar. They loved me. I was a big hit. And we got the job done. All right, when we come back, James Boyce and I are going to go through. I really did compare that. And guess what? We have a special treat for you. Carla Bruni, her creds versus Michelle's creds. She's a singer. Yeah, didn't know it? We got some music. You can hear the First Lady of France coming back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Welcome back. We always could spot a friend. Welcome back. And I smile when I think how you must have been.
You and I are meant to be. That's Friday on the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. James Boyce is meant to be here every Friday, hanging out with me a little bit, having some fun, okay, in an otherwise dark and gloomy world. Is that okay, James? Can we, like, is it okay and allowed for us to have some fun?
Oh, absolutely, especially on Friday afternoon. You know, all these weeks seem like long weeks, Nancy. But it's been, you know, it's been a pretty good week. I think President Obama did a great job. I thought Michelle Obama was very touching with the Queen.
Yeah.
And
touching with, you know, the Queen. You made a funny.
I made a funny.
Uh-huh.
Boy toy funny alert.
There you go.
You know, but I think that, you know, the unemployment numbers, frankly, are pretty bad. But, and in some states, like your dear home state, are obviously much, much worse. But it seems to me they're even maybe a little bit underreported. You know,
yeah,
it does happen with unemployment numbers sometimes.
What is that, the German word, when you take delight in someone else's pain? I know you're smart. You'll know this. Freudenscheid. What is it? Freudenscheid? John, say it on, the air, John.
Freudenscheid, I believe.
Freudenscheid?
Freudenscheid, yeah.
Well, I don't know that it's that. It's more like we feel like finally the country, okay, we've been in recession for 8 years. We have 11%+ in unemployment for a long time. Today everyone's freaking about 8.5. We're like, okay, welcome to our world. Yeah. Anyways, all right, so let's get back to this real quick. And then, because I do want to get into the bigger implications of the G20 and how that deal was so easy compared to what we're trying to do here, you know, which is would be seemingly less. Michelle Obama's Wikipedia, James.
Mm-hmm.
So she, south side of Chicago, not privileged for sure. And she ended up going to Princeton in her undergrad, graduated cum laude, and then Harvard Law School. Started at the prominent law firm Sidley Austin, where she met Barack Obama. Worked in public service, a number for the city, and lots of different things. She went to become was on the board of University of Chicago Hospital, or she worked for them. She's making big time buku dollars, $273 $1,000 alone from that as a senior executive at a hospital thing. you know, lots of public service, volunteering, yada, yada, yada. Carla Bruni. She is the daughter of an Italian-born, naturalized French songwriter, singer, and a former model. She's now a French citizen because she married the president,
mm-hmm.
but she was Italian. Born in Turin, Italy. Lovely city, been there. But she... Her career, it says, modeling. She signed on at the age 19 at a model, so she's been a model and a singer. In fact,
oof,
that's it, a model and a singer, pop singer. Here, would you like to hear a little bit of Carla?
Please, that's why I came back from the Bahamas, to hear Carla Bruni sing.
Because I haven't heard it either. I asked John, get some Carla Bruni. Here you go. Here's Bruni, Tatien.
Yanaki kaka, yanaki kaka, yanaki deyaka, yanaki stata. Certains accourent, d'autres se traînent, certains secours. Moi, je suis Tatienne, je suis Tatienne, je suis Tatienne, je suis Tatienne. Ce n'est pas français, non, mais c'est bon quand même. Et je te donne mon corps, mon âme, et mon crison.
Can't take it anymore.
Breathy, sort of... fascinating. I don't know how to, what would be her equivalent here, folks? 866-991-9927. She's got that breathy sort of, je ne sais quoi, that breathy.
Oh, look at you. That's very good.
Français. Great culture. Okay, so listen, so this was her deal. She was a pop star, dated Mick Jagger, a couple other American celebs, and then, she met Bruni, who was just recently divorced at a dinner party, November of 2007.
Yeah.
And after a brief romance, they married on February 2nd. So November, they meet. They're married in February. Huh. That is what you call brief. it's her first marriage, his third, Sarkozy, his third marriage.
Well, can you imagine if we had a Democratic president and on his third marriage married a model that he'd known for 90 days?
It would not. Can you imagine what the right wing and the talk show hosts would do about that? I mean, I don't. Have we ever had a divorced president in office? I don't believe we have.
We have not.
I think we've had a single president, right? Someone got married. Someone, look this up, please. Somebody.
Well, then Coolidge was single when he went into the White House, I think.
Woodrow Wilson, John is saying? Okay. He married in office. Yeah, okay. Edith
Wilson.
Galt.
Not Coolidge Wilson.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. But, yeah, even compare, call it a smash in fact, or a fashion smackdown, is hilarious, given the caliber of these two women in their lives. To put them on the same stage together and say it's a matchup is, to me, pretty
let me
funny.
Tell you that, let me tell you that Michelle Obama is more attractive than Carla Bruni.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Way, way hotter. Way hotter. Home team.
We're going with our girl, Michelle, for 500.
500. All right. With that note, hang on. James Boyce coming back. I got more to throw at you on Friday on the Nancy Skinner Show. So sad. Folks, this is Nancy Skinner. You know the dollar seems less like real money and more like play money every day. I'm not the only one saying our financial system is broken. You're hearing it everywhere. The bailouts necessary to fix our economy are also undermining our dollar. That's why I think now is a good time to acquire gold. Don't wait. Call my friends at ITM Trading and get some gold today. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Now, since the dollar hit its peak in July 2001, it's lost over 41% to its most recent low. During the same period, gold went up 278%. Think about it. Now our government is spending trillions more in stimulus than it was then. Trillions! Experts say this will be devastating to the dollar. Don't wait. Call my friends at ITM Trading now at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Ask for their free information starter packet. I got some $20 gold coins from ITM, and you should too. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Hi, friends. Nancy Skinner here. So you know I'm a finance major. I talk a lot about business, right? Well, my dad, Chuck Skinner, was the original entrepreneur in this family, and he's done it again. A few years ago, my mom slipped and fell on an ice cube from the automatic dispenser on the refrigerator. Okay, mom was 74 years young then, so it was pretty scary. So my dad invented, tested, and patented the ice cube catcher. It's an attractive molded plastic lip that attaches to any size fridge, because it's adjustable, and catches all those dangerous and messy cubes before they hit the floor. And it comes in colors for all refrigerators, white, black, and stainless steel. Hey, for $9.95 plus shipping and handling, you can't go wrong. Call 1-888-4-A-ICE-CUBE-CATCHER. That's 1-888-4-A, the number 4, letter A, ice cube catcher, or 888-424-2328, or buy one online at icecubecatcher.com. Oh, and they're made right here in Michigan in the good old U.S. of A. That's 1-888-48-ICE-CUBE-CATCHER, or 1-888-424-2328.
Bringing you the best talk in the capital city, AM 1330, KXLJ.
With you. But seriously, people don't want to stand in front of my big, awesome wizard head and hear me going, duh. They want answers. That's why I go to USA.gov, the official source for government info. It gives me the smarts to go with the show. Say someone asks for a brain. I go to USA.gov, type in student loans, and 4 years later, they're chock full of knowledge. Is the Wicked Witch terrorizing your neighborhood? Well, move. Then search USA.gov for change of address form so your friends can find you and the witch can't. How about if you're stuck here from Kansas and want to go home? Well, check out USA.gov for the latest travel restrictions and passport applications. I even use it for myself. Bought my sweet ride at a government auction I found on USA.gov. I call it the Wizmobile. Balloons for squares.
For federal and state government information, there's no place like USA.gov.
Sergeant Matthew Kyle was on his second tour in Iraq when injured.
I was shot in the neck by an Iraqi sniper on combat patrols.
As a quadriplegic, Sergeant Kyle will require specialized medical care and benefits for the rest of his life. That's where Paralyzed Veterans of America can help. National Service Officer Bobby Hager explains.
A National Service Officer exists solely to help veterans get their benefits. We're able to fill out all of the forms and applications and ask for all of the benefits that veteran's entitled to.
Matthew's wife, Tracy Kyle.
We don't have the knowledge to go through this by ourselves. And these benefits are going to take you through the rest of your life.
If you don't ask for a benefit, the VA can't give it to you. the veteran doesn't know what to ask for.
We could not have done this journey without the Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Paralyzed Veterans is an independent, not-for-profit organization founded by vets for vets.
To help, visit pva.org.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
You'll come home after a hard day and just start in on me, you know, like, hey, how's your day? How was school? What you got going on? I mean, it gave me the chills.
My father would drive me all the way to the mall. He wouldn't stop until we were right in front of my friends. And oh my God, when...
I wanted to go to Europe, and he seriously made me get a job to pay for it. And that one time...
He insisted on taking us to the movies, even though he knew Stephen totally worked there and I was totally in love with him. And...
The time I got this wicked, cool scorpion tattoo on my shoulder, not even the whole arm, just the shoulder, and he grounded me for 2 weeks. 2 weeks! And oh yeah.
When I wanted to major in ceramics, because I'm like way good at it, my dad told me I'd have to pay my own tuition. Like, duh. How am I supposed to earn that kind of dough making pottery?
Embarrass them. Horrify them. Freak them out. Don't worry. They'll appreciate it. Eventually. A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council. Have you been a dad today? For more information, visit fatherhood.org.
And if there's someone you can't live without, then do so. And if there's someone you can just shove out, we'll do so. You can be my Yoko Ono. You can follow me where.
Speaking of first spouses, I don't want to leave this one alone. James Boyce is with me on the Nancy Skinner Show on Friday, 866-991-9927. James, before we move along to our august subject matter, on the subject of first spouses, and you know I'm fascinated by first spouses, James, because I worked for one. I was chief of staff to the governor's husband here in Michigan.
I know the governor's husband, as you know, in Michigan.
Dan Mulhern?
Yeah.
What a nice guy he is. He's an awesome guy. And so it's interesting to me. I had to attend the first spouses, all the gatherings in Washington and here, and we hosted all the governors. And so I've always been sort of fascinated with the roles that they play.
Sure.
By that, and to see, and everyone would ask me, really, Dan, come on, he's running the state, right? She's just, I'm like, are you kidding me? No, they really are, they're teammates. They obviously they're partners, they talk, but does he make decisions for her? No, just doesn't work that way.
Definitely not Governor Graham.
yeah, absolutely. If you know her, you know she's a very intelligent and driven, focused woman. With a lot on her plate these days, I should add. But here, this is an interesting, as I went through the slideshow of the first wives on AOL, it's pretty interesting to see in Argentina, Nestor Kirchner, these guys pulled what Bill and Hillary couldn't do. They pulled it off. He was the president. He had 60% approval rating his first term in office, but he chose not to stand again, and he stepped down. She ran, his wife Cristina, and won the next term. How would you like that to be? You're the president of Argentina, Buenos Aires. By the way, I'm sure you've been, you boy toy, you down with all those beautiful, leggy, olive skinned women, right?
No, I haven't. But actually, now
you're going.
I gotta go to Expedia. I'll be right back.
Yes. Viva la Buenos Aires. It's a great. It's a beautiful city. Very European. But anyways, how weird is that to be switch roles, and then you were the president, now she's the president. You think there's a little what do you call that, a little pillow talk going on there?
I guess, you know. I mean, I'm wondering how the actual transition of power worked.
All right, yeah, the transition of power. I'm sure it flows smoothly. Ed in L.A. wants to take a shot at me, so that's okay. Let's let Ed.
Thank God for Jimmy Fox to be ragging on the French, but you know, he also mentioned that you didn't know.
Wait a minute, you said it. Wait, I think your comment got cut off, Ed. Typical of me, the Fox chick, to rip on the French.
Yeah, ripping on the French. I mean, yeah, that's right out of the Fox playbook there.
Okay, yeah, that's what I got right here, right in front of my hands, the playbook.
Nancy, one other thing. You asked about the American presidents that have been divorced. There's only one that I know of, and that was Ronald Reagan.
Oh, that is correct. You are correct.
Right.
Yeah, and he was married, so he was married twice. Nancy Reagan was wife two.
Was
correct.
Wife number two, right.
Yeah. You know what I've always wondered? Who's Ron Reagan? Which mother is...
First mother.
First mother? Oh, okay. And her name was what?
Was it Jane Wyman, I think.
Oh, it's Jane, celebrity. Okay, Ed. Well, thanks for ripping on me and for that trivial piece of marital...
No, that's good. He could play. The more trivial, the better, right, you know?
I'm for it. I'm for it. Before we leave the Bruni, before we leave the whole Bruni thing, Larry has a comment on from Ontario, Canada, my neighbor.
No, Ontario, California. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I read it wrong.
Another neighbor.
Well,
not a problem, but... You know, I received an email, and I don't think any of the first wives have done this. It was a nude layout of Carla Bruni. And I will admit, she is a very, very attractive woman. She has beautiful eyes. But when I say that this was a nude pictorial, I mean it was a nude pictorial.
Larry, dude, you know, I've got to ask you this. If you're getting that in your email, buddy, you better delete your cookies on your website to where you're going. What sites are you visiting, my friend, that you get full nudity emails?
Hey, it was a friend that sent it to me, and I have shared it with friends who have all said, whoa.
Jeez.
That's all I'll say is, whoa. And
I bet you that there is no such counterpart of Michelle Obama out there.
Absolutely not. And I'm thrilled, and she is the perfect mother that way. But we're not French. And if the French find that acceptable, then that's fine. That's their choice. I just mean, you know, when it comes to the two of them getting together, I'm glad that they comment on their fashion choices.
Hey, I found in the Wikipedia this what you're talking about, this new picture. Larry, guess what? There was controversy on the eve of a state visit to the UK, where Christie's Auction House had that photograph of Bruni taken during her career as a model. They sold it for $91,000.
Oh, I'm sure.
That one picture. That's got to be pretty hot.
Well, this was a series of pictures. I don't remember who the photographer was, but there had to be 10 or 15 pictures in it.
Hmm. Right. Well, there you go.
Absolutely.
All the world's a stage. Thanks for that.
Wonderful weekend.
You too, Larry. All right. So have we extinguished this First Lady nude picture fashion smackdown scenario enough, James?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I know you want to talk. I know you're just dying to talk about Levi Johnson talking safe sex with Tyra Banks. Hold off on that, because I gotta jump in with another one. I'm listening to Rush. You know, Rush and I have a pretty serious relationship, right? I know you know we got our little thing going on, but Rush and I, he's the man, right?
Yeah.
And I'm upset because he was talking about going after babes today, but I'll get over that. We'll have a little silent treatment for a couple days, and it'll pass. But I'm listening to him on the way in, and his caller calls in and says, you know, Rush, I'm so angry, and I can't believe nobody's doing anything about it. You know, we I know we voted and all that, but something must be done. And Rush went into his thing about how there are going to be hundreds of thousands of tea parties all across the land because everyone's so mad and they're all scared for our country. And then, of course, you heard Glenn Beck, right?
That guy annoys the crap out of me.
Did you hear Colbert on Glenn Beck?
Yes.
For those who didn't, I love this guy.
It's a new project Glenn introduced on his special. And here's the idea. Truth is, they don't surround us. We surround them. Who are them? Them's the ones we're surrounding. And we're the voices in Glenn's head telling him to get us to take back what's rightfully ours. It's all part of Glenn's 9-12 project. I'll let Glenn explain.
We weren't told how to behave that day after 9-11. We just knew it was right. It was the opposite of what we feel today.
Are you ready to be that person that you were that day after 9-11 on 9-12?
Ready!
Now he stands up, he's got a gas mask on with the rifle and a diaper on. This is Stephen Colbert, the visual you are not seeing.
The adult diapers come in handy. You never have to leave your bunker.
So what's up with this, James? Beck has been crying on his show because of the fear, the loss of the country. And these callers to Rush's show, they're angry and scared and organizing pitchfork rebellions and crying. What's up? Do you have any psychological theories on this?
Yes, they're insane.
Well, besides that one, do you have any deeper insight than that?
No.
No, I mean, do you think, Beck,
I mean, I don't get anybody that likes Glenn Beck at all. You know, so
well,
I don't know. I have no comment about Glenn Beck other than I think he's an idiot.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, I was talking to some folks just who aren't political types of, you know, aficionados, but they watch. They're casual perusers of the news who do watch Glenn Beck. I used to, when I was at Fox, I used to do my bathroom break, and he was always on the air, and I'd see the silly things he said. But the crying, he's done this now a couple times, just broken into tears, and it's not, to me, the question is, one, it's completely inauthentic. I mean, if he's Ted Haggard preaching, you know, that whole fake shtick. Do you think he really welled up with emotion over what he perceives to be the loss of his country? Does anyone legitimately think that those were real tears, real emotion, or just like some two-bit, you know, creepy preacher who's having an affair, whipping up some shtick for the Sunday service?
You know, I don't know what he's up to, but I just find him so bad, Nancy. You know, and I find him so hypocritical. And, you know, I'll do a little research and find out what Glenn Beck actually was on 9-11, you know, because he's awful. I know I keep saying that, but it's just like he's awful. He's so bad.
Well,
he shows unwatchable.
Actually, this is what he actually said. This is where Colbert really tore him apart.
Glenn laid out exactly what he...
No, this is... I'm sorry, wrong.
Now, by 9-12, Glenn doesn't just mean the day after 9-11. It also stands for his 9 principles and 12 values that will move us beyond the complacency we felt on 9-10 and beyond the fear we felt on 9-11 to the compassion we felt on 9-12. And hopefully, we'll all eventually get to the way Glenn felt on 9-9 of 2005.
Listen to this.
This is horrible to say, and I wonder if I'm alone in this. You know, it took me about a year to start hating the 9-11 victims' families. I don't hate all of them. I hate probably about 10 of them. But when I see, you know, 9-11 victim family on television or whatever, I'm just like, oh, shut up. I'm so sick of them because they're always complaining, and we did our best for them.
Good point. The 9-12 project is not for families directly affected by 9-11. Just people building their careers on it.
You know, so you hate the victims of the families of 9-11, and then you get your TV show, and then you cry because your country's losing it's being taken over. Come on. Ka-ching, 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 ka-ching.
I've got some 9-11 widows. Maybe I'll stick them on Glenn Beck.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a... He could, he'll feel their pain. He'll feel their pain now. Now he will. All right. We actually do. We are going to talk. I know I do this with you. Like, we are going to get to the very serious and deep, complex, and intellectual issues of our day. But it's just so much fun to hang out with James Boyce and have a little fun on a Friday. So, but I will. We'll get to it. I promise you. And your calls, 866-991-9927. Still the same old number. Oh, good. That's a good thing. We're on the air. That's a good thing. We're alive. We're breathing. And we've reached a turning point in the global downturn, I believe. We'll talk about that coming up as well on the Nancy Skinner Show. Show on a Friday, 866-991-9927, the number to the program, I think, me thinks. James Boyce is with me from the Huffington Post on a Friday afternoon. So, James, a few more details coming out in New York. A gunman in an immigration services center in Binghamton. Binghamton. I've been there. I can't pronounce
it. Oh, yeah, I can tell.
I've been there. I actually have been there. So this gunman now is found dead, a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. The official says 13 people are now dead. It was not clear if he is in that number, that 13 number as well. They know it's planned because he and perhaps there are a couple others involved, backed up their trucks so that people could not escape the... I got to tell you, when I saw... A lot of times, I don't know how you feel about breaking news of this nature while I'm getting ready for the show. I listen to see if it's sort of a random local issue or if there's some thread through it that might make it connect it to a bigger, more national story, because I do focus on more national issues here. And when they said American Civic Society, you know, that just seems like a strange place for a shoot-up, right? A civic society, just the name, civics, American civics, G20 going on. Didn't you start to, as you watched that news today, were you starting to question whether there was a motive, there's something going on, you know, with the underculture, the undercurrent of what's going on in society, or no?
Well, I agree with that. You know, I mean, it's saying that the organization, the groups there, the building is for helping immigration, you know, immigrants and refugees. So, you know, you, unfortunately, you could be looking at a little bit of a, you know, potentially looking at a hate kind of situation.
Right. Well, then, all right, so this ties into this whole thing with Glenn Beck, who's out there talking about crying and that the country is in such, you know, the polls are, everyone feels almost like a sense of rejoice that at least things are on the right path, and they're crying and stirring up all this thing. And I can't help but say, okay, you know, I'm not connecting the dots. I'm saying, is there something to be worried about here? Reggie in L.A. You have the same thought as me, Reggie?
Well, yeah, you know, I was listening to Tom Hartman's show earlier, and he had a guest on, and they were discussing some of the eerie similarities between Dr. King's assassination and the kind of language that was going on directed at Dr. King, referring to him as a communist and a socialist, for example. And the same things we're hearing from some of these radical right-wingers about President Obama.
You know, I don't even like to, I'll tell you that, Reggie, I don't even like to talk about, that, like, connection. You're already going way further than you should, even talking about it.
No. Hold on a minute. Now, you asked the question, and I'm answering, I'm giving you my answer, okay? It's my opinion, all right? I'm one of your callers. I love your show.
Okay.
And you asked for an opinion.
I know, but I don't like to, I don't like any talk of assassination. I'm not, I just think, I don't put stuff out there like that. That's what I'm saying, Reggie. I don't like to talk about because you know what? I'm not going to further that conversation or further that visual in anyone's mind and make any connection or do that.
I'm not trying to either. I'm saying that's what may be the undercurrent here on that side. I'm not trying to advance that. In fact, I'm against it.
Well, I don't think, and I your caller, I appreciate your concern that you've rightly raised that when you start using language like that, it can have an effect. But I just don't want to go there. When you connect the dot to Martin Luther King, I think that's crossing the line. I guess that's how I would put it. What do you think, James?
Oh, I think so. I do think, unfortunately, that, you know, as the economic condition continues to worsen in the United States, you know, you are going to see, you know, increased examples of racism. I'm not suggesting you know that about what happened in New York today, but, you know, you always see anger towards immigrants and towards new people in a country or community when times are tough. And, you know, as the unemployment rate continues to go up, I believe it'll go over 10% at some point in the next couple months. You're going to see a lot of anger. A lot of people are angry. They don't know what happened.
And a lot of people are feeling hopeful. David, you feel hopeful, right?
Oh, I am very hopeful. I can't. Every time I see Obama and his wife, Michelle, talking to the Europeans, he puts a smile on my face that will never go away. And I think this is a great, great thing for our country.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Sorry about that, David. Didn't mean to cut you off there. I agree. James?
I agree with that.
Did you feel ever better represented on that world stage than you did yesterday?
After 8 years of not being able to watch George Bush say anything, just to see Michelle Obama, see Barack Obama, you know, see what a wonderful couple they are, you know, how smitten they are with each other. It was great to see.
Yeah. Out of time, my friend, my boy toy, James Boyce. Thanks again. Glad to have you back.
All right, I'll talk to you next Friday.
Next Friday, James Boyce, Huffington Post. Check it out. More of me coming back on the other side. Nancy Skinner Show. All right, this is what I promise I will do for you this weekend. I have so many great emails, and I haven't been able to get to them, and I keep saying I want to pull them up and print them out and share them with you because I get some great emails from the left and the right and funny and everything, colorful. So this weekend I'm going to dedicate some time to just actually printing these out and instead of on my BlackBerry Storm phone and do them to you. But one guy keeps writing me demanding to know, Nancy Skinner, are you or are you not a Scientologist? When did that ever come up? Why is this man demanding to know whether I'm a Scientologist? That's pretty funny. And the answer to your question, John, is no. I'm Catholic. I don't think they're related, Scientologists and Catholics. Not to my knowledge, but I don't know where you heard that or thought that or why you're demanding to know, but that just struck me as funny. It is the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. We're going to be talking a little bit about the auto industry here with all eyes on Detroit. Final Four this weekend here in Detroit. What bizarre timing and what opportunities lie therein in a second. But David, in Portland... David, right before the break, you were on the line and you're going to say something and I had to cut you off because we have this thing called a clock and we stop, it just dead stops and then they go in and we try and make money for a few minutes and then we come back. So I'm sorry we cut you off, sir. We love Portland. It's a beautiful town. It's like so far advanced in the rest of the country. So anyone from Portland, man, step up to the top.
We're pretty open-minded out here. You were asking if I was optimistic about what is going on. Extremely so. Whenever I see Obama, our President Obama and his wife, lovely wife, talking to Europeans, it puts a smile on my face. It really does. And it's just really great to see once again America being presented in a very positive, intelligent way.
Yeah, you know what? And but you better believe that there's not going to be an impact from that. You see the love fest that happened over the last couple of days, especially with Michelle Obama and those little girls, and you know that she was you know serving as a shining light for those girls that are living in the projects
right.
in the UK. That those girls just aren't touched, and all of their lives won't be touched somehow. And the whole world, that there's going to be the Obama effect, okay, there will be, and this is not just in terms of national security, it's almost, I think it, even from an economic standpoint, that there is, if market confidence is so important to turnarounds, the Obama effect is important to the global turnaround. The confidence that at least we have faith in this person who is thoughtful, intelligent, and, you know, surrounded himself with good people. Now, he said he's going to make some mistakes. We can't build him up to the point that he's not going to be able to make a mistake or a misstep here and there, because he will. And no one is immortal. He is a guy. I know him personally. You know, he's a real down-to-earth, super intelligent guy, but he's still a person. So
absolutely.
It's great to see. But do you feel like you got to get it out there, David?
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Now, the last question is for you, sir. Are you now or ever, have you ever been a Scientologist?
came close once.
Oh, well, really? Okay. All right, David, yeah, I got to run along here.
They have these little tin cans with wires that are attached to it, and I just out of curiosity tried going on, it's what they call it, a meter or some kind of ohm meter or something like that. But I had a question for you.
Well, I got to run along, actually. So,
okay.
Because I got to guess. What's your question? Quickly tell me your question.
I was going to say, if Glenn Beck ever had a lobotomy, would there be anything to a lobotomize?
I don't know about that, sir. I don't know what the aftermarket would be for that particular product. Speaking of product, we sell some product here in Detroit. We sell some cars. We sell 50% of the cars to the rest of the world, despite what everybody likes to jump on us and say that we are a has-been industry. I don't know any other industry where they have 50% market share in the whole world. Actually, probably those exist. Just don't know if that might be more accurate. All eyes are going to be on Detroit with the Final Four and the fact that Michigan State, one of our own teams, is in it, even though I'm a Wolverine. That's all right. I'm going to root for the home state, home team, hometown girl in Detroit City, making good on a national show. So we have the opportunity, I think, to have a discussion about, once again, about what's at stake here with the auto industry, what the future could hold if the rest of the country understood exactly where we are, how much progress we've made. To that point, we have Ron Harber on the program. He is a partner in a Detroit firm. The Harbor Report was a newsletter since 1981 that he founded, and it's now since sold off, but he is still consulting. This report is an authoritative guide to automotive manufacturing in North America, a leading competitive analysis tool used by OEMs, suppliers, for its benchmark performance, develop strategies, and improve operations. It goes on and on and on, which really means he knows a whole lot about cars and manufacturing, and in particular, the green and advanced technologies therein. And Ron Harber is joining us today. Thanks, Ron.
Oh, how are you?
Very well, thank you. We're having a little fun on Fridays.
Are we talking about basketball or cars?
Well, you know what? It's the lead-in. Anytime I can talk to the auto industry, I try and sneak it in on a national program because it is national. But I'm from Detroit and live in Detroit. So, do you live in Detroit, sir?
I do. Okay. So it would be nice to have some fun this weekend with basketball and take your minds off the rest.
Well, the eyes will be on Detroit, and given the conversation about whether the government should or should not support them, there will be discussion about it, given that it's the site of the national championship. So, you specialize, Ron, in looking at how advanced the technology has gotten. That I find to be, I'm out there quite a bit on national cable shows and fighting for Detroit. People think that we're still making the Buicks that their grandfathers drove. And talk a little bit about the timeline that these technologies take, because I think that's the frustrating part. I know the Volt, I know the head of, we had him on, the director of the Chevy Volt, the line talked about how incredible that car is. But there's a timeline to these things. They can't, I had a caller the other day say, Elon Musk and Tesla has this Roadster and that's ready for production in sooner. these things take some time to produce, do they not?
Well, sure they do. And I, you know, it's, I actually testified in the first trial that came in Vermont on the AB 1493, which was the law that came out of California demanding emissions and fuel economy standards that would reach about 43 miles per gallon in the next 5 years. And everybody wants to get to that because I think everybody is in agreement that we don't want to burn any more oil than we have to. But the problem is that those technologies, they characterize them as just on the shelf. And if they wanted to, they could put them on a car tomorrow and it would only cost another $100 or something like that. But the truth is that those technologies aren't fully developed. And even if you put them all on together, you wouldn't get that kind of fuel economy. So it takes time to do that and also to build it in volume. I mean,
the point, volume. This technology that Tesla has is what as I understand it, they took essentially 4,000 laptop batteries and tied them together.
Yeah,
and 6,000. What's that?
6,000.
6,000. I stand corrected, sir, by an expert. But so the problem is that you know, it takes that is not a mass production type technology, and it would take quite a while to get up to volume on that, right?
Right. And the thing is that even there's still questions there of whether those batteries, there's heat issues and how you cool them. And even with all those batteries, they only go a certain distance. So people are afraid to have a car that if you were stuck on a long trip and didn't have a place to plug it in, would you get stranded? So people are still not, they still don't feel secure about the battery technology. But if we have a breakthrough there, that's something that any automaker would bring to market as fast as they could because they know that would be a game changer.
Well, why don't you explain then? You're the expert. You have the newsletter. What is the difference between a plug-in hybrid and which you would say the Chevy Volt is a plug-in hybrid?
Right. Yeah.
And something like a fully electric Roadster?
Yeah, like the Tesla Roadster, it runs 100% off the batteries, and you just recharge them just like you would your car phone or your mobile phone or something like that. With a plug-in hybrid, essentially, it runs off the battery, but it has a small engine on board so that when that battery starts to drain, it regenerates the energy to charge it as you go. So you could run quite a distance without ever even having to use the gas engine at all.
Yeah, well, the Chevy Volt, in fact, I think it's... You can go up to 40 miles without ever using the engine at
That's
all,
right
off the battery. And the other trick there is with the Prius, because a lot of people drive Priuses thinking that they're smarter than we are. And the problem there is that as soon as you're going down the highway, I mean, after a few miles per hour, you're using your gas engine.
Right.
So if you see a Prius driving down, this is what I learned. If you see a Prius on the highway, it's burning gas. It's not on its battery.
Right.
It's electric engine, folks.
It basically uses the electric engines at startup and you know, just to get going. That's why it's perfect if you do nothing but city driving. But if you're doing highway driving, actually the other kind of version, the non-hybrid, would do better.
Yeah. So listen, when we come back, I have one question for Ron Harber, who's written the Harber Report since 1981 about automotive technology. If you have a question, hop in, 866-991-9927. I've heard about fuel cells. I've heard about electric cars. I've heard about diesel, biodiesel. I've heard so many people call me with so many things that they think is the future of automotive technology. We're going to ask an expert what he thinks. How about that? A definitive view. Well, at least one of them. 866-991-9927, the number to the Nancy Skinner Show on a Friday. For the Final Four, all eyes on my hometown, Detroit, where we'll be looking pretty spiffy at the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. But given the tenuous position of the auto industry, obviously, there will be a national conversation. I'm sure that the cable channels and such will be talking about Detroit in not only where this tournament is, but what's the future of the auto industry. Ron Harber is with me. He is he founded the Harber Report, a newsletter published since 1981, an authoritative guide to automotive manufacturing. So, Ron, first of all, are you going to the game?
I'm not. I'm actually going to be in L.A. this week.
Oh, you are. You're going to be in L.A. We got some people on the line from L.A. that want to talk to you about electric cars for a second, and we're going to do that. But so I asked before the break, I said, you know, I've been in search of the dream technology. For me, it seems like ultimately it's fuel cells. But that's a long way, and there are a lot of the infrastructure obstacles, having filling stations, hydrogen filling. People talk about plug-in hybrids. They talk about pure electric. They talk about, a lot of people have called me to say, you know, what about just biodiesel or the diesels that are sold over in Europe, like the TDIs and such? Of the whole mix of technologies, what do you see as the most promising, or do you think it should be a mix and not one, you know, perfect technology we should aim for?
Well, it will be a mix over the next 20, 30 years. If we could perfect fuel cells over that time, that would be the best solution in the sense that it doesn't emit anything except a little bit of water and oxygen. So that would be the perfect thing, and you wouldn't burn any fossil fuels at all. So that's a good thing. But as you said, there's a lot of
issues. You think fuel cells is, if we could get there, that is the way to go, using hydrogen. If we could get the, I think it's called electrolysis process, where you convert hydrogen into electricity to the point where it is, you are producing the ratios of energy transformation are correct, then hydrogen is the way to go, right?
Well, yeah, again, because we wouldn't then be burning any gasoline at all, so that would be the perfect world. But there's a lot of other issues, like carrying hydrogen on your car in a tank that tends to be pretty flammable.
I've heard from other people who say that not any more than a gas tank full of gas. It's just a different form of hydrocarbon, and that is a myth.
Well, it just depends on how you protect it. So it's true. Yeah, it shouldn't be any more dangerous once they have it all done and perfected and carry it the right way. But that would be the best scenario. But short term, the interesting thing is that in Europe, I mean, they use more than 60% of the cars sold are diesels. And the reason is because the diesel fuel is actually less cost than gas. In our country, it costs more because it's heavily taxed by the government because trucks use it, and they want them to pay for the road damage that they do. But in Europe, it's actually less expensive. And
they tax their gas there, though, so they have smaller cars. So they have just the reverse situation going on.
Well, you get far better gas mileage with diesel. You get 30-40% better.
But you also have, it's also dirt. It's a dirtier fuel. I mean, you're not solving the problem.
No,
the root of the fossil, hydrocarbon-based fuel problem. Dan in Los Angeles wants to get in on this conversation. Dan, you're mad at me about something?
Well, I'm not necessarily mad at you. I just, you know, the other day when you were talking to that guy who called in about the Tesla Roadsters,
Tesla,
that, you know, we couldn't bring this technology to market. And I just felt like it was a little bit insulting to the brain power in this country. You know, the Tesla Roadster is an example of what a small startup company can bring to market without the resources of the big three auto manufacturers. And if those guys really wanted to bring a vehicle like the Tesla Roadster to market, if they really wanted to, they could do it.
All right, Dan, I'm glad you raised that question, because I didn't say they couldn't ever bring it to market. I said the timing of that, because Ron is an expert on this. I thought it was 4,000 laptop batteries. Ron says it's 6,000. Ron, will you explain why it's just you can't go from point A quickly? I mean, you have to then have the manufacturing processes to mass produce it, and why there's a time delay.
Well, the big issue is just the fact that batteries don't, you know, that they run out too fast. The GM did bring the EV1 to market years ago, and there was no one would buy it. That's the problem. So we'll see with Tesla, because Mr. Musk has actually done a pretty good job with it. It's a nice-looking car, so we'll see how it sells. It's also incredibly expensive. So it's not that the technology isn't there at that same type, and they say it's been brought to market, but right now there's not the demand for it. As long as gas is cheap. And this is where the government policy is missing. As long as gas is cheap, there's no demand for small cars, electric cars, you name it.
Right. Hey, I'm out of time, Ron. I do appreciate you joining the show and giving your expertise, and we'll say go Spartans.
Yeah.
Thanks. Ron Harber.
Thanks.
Of the Harber Report. When we come back, I got lots in store today. 866-991-9927 on the Nancy Skinner Show. Cars and drummers go crack, boom, bam.
way you move, bitch, baby. It's like you see right through me and make it easier. So please me, you don't even have to try.
I'm the president of the United States. I'm not the president of China. I'm not the president of Japan. I'm not the president of the other participants here. And so I have a direct responsibility to my constituents to make their lives better. That's why they put me in there. If I'm effective as America's president right now, part of that effectiveness involves holding, providing Americans insight into how their self-interest is tied up with yours, and that's an ongoing project because it's not always obvious.
You see, the best thing that ever happened to this country, President Obama, best thing in a long time, I'll tell you that. This is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 866-991-9927. Back to that theme a little bit, getting more and more reports of the president's trip and what a great success it is. I'm seeing a picture here with President Obama and Angela Merkel, the Prime Minister of Germany. Or is she president? Is that her title? She's a chancellor. Excuse me. Now, nobody has commented at all about what she's wearing, whether it's J. Crew or it's, what did Carla Bruni wore? Forget what designer out. Why isn't anyone talking about Angela Merkel? It's sexist, is it not? Is it because she's the chancellor? No, I don't think so. I think not. All right, so listen, there's people want to talk a little bit about cars. I'm going to be moving along here, too. The question really is about Obama and his, I think he's provided hope for the rest of the world in a lot of areas, especially with the economy, obviously, which is pulling the whole world down. But even when we're talking about cars, I'll tell you this, he does what he believes to be right, whether it's popular or not. And the polls right now to help the auto industry are not good. So if he were a finger in the wind kind of politician, he, like our past president was, then he would, be pulling his support, because even Bush wouldn't meet with the big three automakers, took a lot of their money, but for a couple of years wouldn't even meet with them to see how they could begin this retooling process, because it takes so long to get advanced technology to market. It's been in the design phase for a long time. Granted, I ran for Congress saying they needed to speed it up, that they are going to get their rear ends kicked because we were behind the curve on technology. So I'm not a shill for the industry by any means, but it does take time. What people have to understand is to get from, we produce 14 million vehicles, units a year for this technology. So from everything, from the economy to protecting the or helping extend this support to the auto industry, which is unpopular, to the stimulus package, which was very unpopular. He didn't get a single Republican vote. He's got to go back and do it with the budget, which apparently there's been some good developments with the budget. There is some consideration of this budget reconciliation on the Senate side to jam through health care and cap and trade. Who cares what people think? We got to get this done, and we got to do it right. And it's just, it is, if there's a sense of hope in this world, it's that there's someone principled and smart enough to carry it out. That's the magic combination. Smart enough and strong enough to carry it out. All right, let's see. So Alan is in Southern California, and he's held on. Thank you, Alan, holding on. You have an electric car yourself.
Yes, I'm sitting in it right now on my way to pick up my wife from school.
What model is it, sir?
It's a Toyota RAV4. It was built in the early 2000 era, and Edison's got about 1,000 of them that they currently use a lot of. And it uses nickel metal hydride batteries, which have been proven to work very well, and they've been taken off the list of batteries to be able to be used over time, and we in the plug-in industry don't know why.
Nickel, because it's kind of the battery of the past. That's what the Prius uses. Now we're going to a lithium ion battery. Is in terms of technology, seems to be better for a couple of reasons.
Yes, they seem to think that, but the technology with the people that I know, engineers and such, they don't really like the battery. The density is good on the charge, but the controlling the batteries is the difficult side on it. And the nickel metal hydride has been proven. I've been driving for 50,000 miles on mine, and I have no trouble whatsoever with the thing.
Well, you know, why don't we all have them? If Toyota makes such a fabulous electric car, why didn't they just completely dominate the market and it succeed?
Chevron bought the battery technology and put it on a shelf, and they're not letting it off the shelf. They made a special arrangement with Toyota that I understand. I don't know all the details, of course, to not commit to doing anything but Prius batteries with a very limited range when they use nickel metal hydride. So they could get off the dime.
I've heard that. I'm not prone to conspiracy theories along those lines, except for the oil company Chevron being involved in buying up a technology. But I will tell you this: GM just announced that they're going to build a battery plant here in Michigan that will be the lithium-ion battery, and that it is the battery of the future. And they're building a whole new facility because here's the deal. Our governor says is quite a lot out there in the national circuit. Is it we can't end our dependence on foreign oil, which everybody I think agrees, except for my honey bunny Rush Limbaugh, and then be dependent on the battery technology abroad. Be dependent on, right now, Korea is a big supplier, Japan, China will be sprouting up batteries. Then you're swapping out your dependencies. And so we need to build them here. You're fighting with me, nickel metal hydride, lithium. Their eyes are rolling in their heads. I guarantee you that. It's about advancement in technology. That's what it's about. So when this big fight about, oh, you guys want to go back, you're Luddites, and you want people to walk and ride their bike, and no. It's in pursuit of better and better and accelerated technology. Brett is in Woodland Hills, California. Hi, Brett.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm great, thanks.
I just called to make a comment similar to what the gentleman before me just made, which was that, first of all, it's not that people wouldn't buy an electric vehicle. In fact, they tried to, but General Motors wouldn't sell that car. They would only lease that car. And then apparently when they decided that they no longer wanted to produce that car, they told people that their cars needed to be serviced, and they'd have them turn in their cars, and then their cars would disappear, and that was the end of their car.
Well, no, you're talking about the who stole the electric car, the EV1. And I'm not saying that there wasn't, what I don't think happened is they didn't say, well, they stole their car. You need to get it serviced. When their lease was up, they did get the cars back, but they didn't go and say, you need an oil change, sir. And you think you're going to get it serviced and then they steal your car, Brett. I mean,
that's the next thing as well. You know, there's no oil in a car that's electric. I mean, the petroleum based products that they're using is just to lube the chassis parts. Other than that, it's all battery operated. So there is no petrol. There's nothing in it for the oil companies to make in terms of maintenance, in terms of all this other stuff.
Well, there you have a point. I mean, I'm not saying the oil companies and the auto companies are two different interests. Okay, so they had been in the past a sort of chummy. But their interests have definitely grown apart throughout the years.
And it's a little naive to think that they're no longer at all in cahoots at all.
No, I mean, they're not. They're not in cahoots because not anymore. What you got to realize, Brett, and one of the key messages that I think is important is that a lot of people look at Detroit and they look at the bad behavior of the past. And I agree with you. It was focused on maximizing profit in the same way that every other industry, the financials, healthcare, look at the insurance companies. I think cars are, you know, because you drive one and it's so important, such an important and big part of your life, that it's a lot easier to focus in on the bad behavior of the auto companies in the past. And I'm the first to agree with that. But look at the insurance companies and all the outrage of how much money they're gouging people and or the financials and how much risk they took and all this other area. Well, the auto companies did that in the past, but you have now, because I know these people. I know the engineers. They're about my age. You know, it's a younger, I'm pre-boomer. I'm between Xer and boomer, but these people, these engineers have been working on technology. They get it. They grew up like me, believing that we have to affect the environment in a absolutely different way. They're now the engineers that are running these departments and pursuing technology. And some of the vehicles that are out there right now, like the Ford Fusion, it's 41 miles per gallon. It's a hybrid, better than, They have more hybrids at Ford than I think Nissan and Toyota put together. That's the problem. There's too many models. So the idea that it's those old bad guys who stole the EV1s and crushed them when they told them they were going to service them, well, I don't think we're ever going to get to the bottom of that. But I know the kids who are now grown up and running the show, and they have a completely different mindset than that. They share it with us. And that's what I'm trying to say to you.
I've worked on General Motors, like, commercials and whatnot, and some of the gentlemen I worked with that know a little bit more than what I know, that knew people that had EV1s. I mean, I'm speaking from people that spoke to people, you know, let alone the...
When was the EV1?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
15 years ago?
Oh, I don't think it was that long ago.
Yeah, I think... When was the... I'll put 866-991-9927, the question on the table. When... This whole, I'm sure Sharon or someone will know, who stole the electric car, the EV1. I want to know when this was. And if you really think that there was some grand conspiracy by General Motors to put this product out there and then to steal those cars when they were getting serviced without telling the person because they might just sell too many of them, if you believe that conspiracy, number one. And two, do you honestly believe that those same people, even if there was sort of a, you know what, we're going to make more money off of SUVs per vehicle, we should probably put more focus on that product line? I think that's more what happened. And tell me how that is any different than any other industry where they were short-sighted and worried about their own bonus based on that quarter's economic results. It wasn't. It's just that you focus on Detroit because it's your car and it's something that's near and dear to your heart. And there's been a huge change in mindset since then in this industry. And I assure you of that. I don't know that that's happened in other industries. You call in and you tell me. I want to know what industry you work in. Tell me your industry hasn't had an all-out pursuit on the bottom line for this quarter and has been completely short-sighted in terms of where they should be moving. In healthcare, in you name it. Except for iPods. Sony's probably the only one. Technology. Those guys get it. All right, 866-991-9927. I shall stop my ranting now.
Oh, you gotta keep me strong. Move along like I know you do. And even when your hope is gone, move along, just to make it through.
Calling out, calling out. Haven't you wondered why I'm always alone when you're in my dreams? Calling out, calling out. Haven't you
wondered? Okay, Conspiracy Theory Friday. An Ainsley Skinner Show. 866-991-9927. EV1. All right, I've bit. You got me to bite on this. All right, so folks are calling up about it. So let's have at it. All eyes on Detroit. So there's a lot of people that maintain the sentiment that GM purposefully put this car out, the EV1, and then and Sharon, of course, did know it was 1996. That they put leased the cars and then they stole them secretly and crushed them because they were going to be wildly popular. You know what? I think that the world of business is just a lot more profit oriented and than that. But let's see. Let's get some calls in because you've responded. So let's let you talk. John's in Buffalo. Hi, John.
Good afternoon. A couple of points. I believe the leaseholders, or lease owners, took GM to court. And it was finally settled around 2000. They did not steal their cars back. They just refused to renew the leases. And they did, in fact, go around and repo them, you know, complete with trucks to repo the cars. And they were wound up being they wound up being crushed. You'd have to take a look at who killed the electric car.
I saw it. I saw it.
What's very interesting that I don't believe is mentioned in that particular piece is that there were two batteries in the EV1. We'll call it Gen 1, Gen 2. Gen 1 was lead acid, which was what was commonly used. Gen 2 was developed by a fellow named, I believe, Ovshinsky, who had a company.
Ovshinsky here in my backyard,
yes.
Stanley Ovshinsky.
Yes.
He's still alive.
Yes, he is, and he sold the company to GM, and GM turned around and sold it to, guess who? Chevron Texaco. That technology is sitting on the shelf.
No, you know what? I actually am. I know Stanley, and they did have an infusion of investment from Chevron, so this is where I can weigh in with definitive knowledge. Chevron was a major investor in their company, it's called Unisolar. Solar Avionics is another name for it. He's had several different photovoltaic technologies. The current product that they have is, it's like a PVC roofing tile. So it's photovoltaics in a roofing thing. You put it on like big box stores and roofs, and it's the state of the art. So Chevron is an investor in this company, but this company, I've toured the plant. They are fantastic people. It's a fantastic company. There was, so this idea that Chevron brought this guy, he's still in business. He's 90 some years old. He and his wife passed away, and it was a sad story. That's a ridiculous theory then, because I know that not to be true.
Well, according to what I've read, and there's a video on brasschecktv.com where they actually interviewed this fellow, and they explained the transfer from his company.
Of the battery. Well, if you're talking about the battery,
Battery technology.
The battery that what I saw is on this is that there was a new battery. 96 was introduced, and then they had the nickel metal hydride in 99. They offered that in Arizona, but they stopped it because it didn't perform well in hot weather, that battery. So these were leases because they wanted to have participants in a real world engineering evaluation of those. The Advanced Technology Group at GM. So the leases ended. They decided to scrap the program, probably because it was not making as much money as they would like, would be my guess. I'm not saying they're not profit fiends. Every company is.
Well, no, they would not. They refused to sell the vehicles. They absolutely refused to sell the vehicles to the point where a suit was brought. And they just adamantly refused to sell the vehicles, choosing.
They had a test.
Them.
I fault them for not having started this. This was 1996. They should have started these vehicles two decades ago. Okay, all of this technology. But the point is, would you go sue Burger King because they're not selling tacos? Darn it, you know, companies do have the right to sell what they want to sell. In this particular instance, I think that the government, because of, like, the government's... Did you know that Prius helped develop, Japan helped develop the Prius? They did a lot of the work with Toyota to do the engineering and design for the Toyota Prius to bring it to market. Germany does the same thing. That the United States has a responsibility for national security purposes, from... our oil dependence, to have started working, and just for the jobs of it, the foresight, knowing that we were going to hit peak oil and that we would have $4 a gallon gas, that was, again, something that was predictable. The government should have been working with industry. Now maybe we have a smart government that will start doing that, finally, at last. But don't say it's just the auto companies, folks. Every company in this country did it. They went for the short buck. Now we're starting to think again. All right, we're going to move on. Talk about the G20 and all kinds of other stuff. I got to cram a lot in an hour on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Yeah.
Do you mind for a moment if we pull back the curtain a little bit on the G20? Not that I'm really not interested in the fashion smackdown and the $91,000 paid for the nude picture of Carla Bruni. Or what a train wreck poor Chancellor Angela Merkel's fashion choices were. I know that's really important stuff. But if we could just pull back the curtain a little bit and kind of figure out what happened that was so successful in the G20 summit and now with the NATO convening to figure out the rest of our problems. Can I do that for a minute? Can we actually dig in a little bit of substance? It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I am Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. I've invited somebody who can help me with a little more expertise than myself to try and figure out what happened there that seems so successful. Robert Gutman is the director of Center on Politics and Foreign Relations at the John Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, D.C., where they have co-hosted a series of conferences on politics and foreign policy with the Financial Times newspaper group. So if anybody knows what's going on that side of the pond, our side of the pond, global meltdown, G20 and NATO, it's Robert Gutman. Thanks for being here, Robert.
Thank you.
You don't care about the fashion smackdown, do you?
Well, you can't miss it. I mean, you know, that seems to be the big story. Whenever, I think it's partly because the press, the media, really don't understand economics, don't understand financial issues that much.
Right.
And so it's much easier to discuss the First Lady's arms and what she's wearing. And
ding, 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 ding.
Carla,
you know, you can dress an anchor up, but you can't make her talk. All right, so listen.
My view, what I wrote today was we have the Queen of England who has no power and the First Lady of the United States who's popular but has very little power. And so these people are getting 99% of the press, and the 20 most powerful politicians in the world and government leaders are getting 1% of the news.
Yeah.
That's kind of absurd.
It is absurd. You know, add to that Carla Bruni. I mean, talk about, you know, getting so much attention. This is a former model who, whatever, we're feeding into this. Let's not. All right, so anyway, I do want to tap into your brain. I know that you do understand politics and global economics. So if you will indulge me, Robert. You know, here's President Obama talking about what historic cooperation was delivered.
This kind of coordination really is historic. I said in the meeting that if you had imagined 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago that you'd have the leaders of Germany, France, China, Russia, Brazil, South Africa, a president of the United States named Obama, you know, former adversaries, in some cases former mortal enemies, negotiating this swiftly on behalf of fixing the global economy, you would have said, that's crazy. And yet it was happening, and it happened with relatively few hiccups.
No kerfuffle like we're having here at home. How did that happen? This was over a couple of days. Two questions, Robert. One is, obviously, a lot of this was pre-negotiated. There had been negotiations prior to. But two, there were big conflicting interests between the U.S. and the U.K. on the one hand, who are more Keynesian, trying to push more spending, and you had Germany and France that were trying to blame America, and it was our regulation system, and that we just need to regulate it more. I don't know where everybody else stood. Where did they stand? Who stood where in those two camps?
Okay, well, basically, I mean, you have to see the politics basically trumped economics. British are going to be having an election soon, and Gordon Brown may not be the winner. So he needed the summit as the host to show that he could stand head to toe with the world leaders, and it may have helped him a little bit.
Why did he lose such popularity? Because of the economy?
Well, he's not the most exciting guy after Tony Blair. Tony Blair had a little charisma. Gordon Brown doesn't have much charisma, and it's mainly the economy, sure.
Okay, so he hosted it. That should give him a little bling bling to host the G20, right?
Sarkozy's quite a showman himself. Besides having a gorgeous wife, he's quite the showman. And he was going to walk out of the meeting ahead of time if they didn't do what he wanted to do. And, of course, they didn't do what he wanted to do, and he stayed in the meeting. So it was basically setting up these straw characters. You know, the United States wanted more physical stimulus. The other countries don't agree to that. The French and the Germans wanted more regulation. We didn't agree to that. So it was basically President Obama's first time as president on the, you know, world stage, and he's basically saying to our transatlantic allies and to, you know, everybody else who attended the meeting, he's a player, he knows what's going on, and he met bilaterally with the Chinese and with the Russians. And so...
What he did is he out-politicked them. He met individually with, say, Japan and China.
Because
I would think Japan would be on our side. They would want more stimulus.
Well, he met with the main reason they met with the Japanese and the South Koreans was to tell the North Koreans not to shoot up a missile.
Yeah, that would be really bad. I want to get to that as we end up on the NATO thing, because that's...
But everybody got a little bit out of it. And we're going to give more money to the International Monetary Fund, $1.1 trillion. Everybody's not going to rush into their wallet and give these people money. It basically means the International Monetary Fund can bail out countries that are going bankrupt, like Hungary. Iceland went bankrupt. So there's going to be some more Eastern European countries that do go bankrupt and other countries around the world. And the IMF, International Monetary Fund, will now have more power to draw money from the United States and European countries.
What about Robert China? Where did they come into these negotiations, and where did they end up? Because certainly our fate is tenuously tied to them. $1 trillion of our bonds?
Right.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean...
And we have a lot of their poison toys and tainted seafood, as Paul Krugman points out.
Of China. It's kind of interesting, Obama, who says he's a multilateralist and believes in doing everything multilaterally, had more one-on-one bilateral meetings than any other head of state in London. So that's kind of a contradiction, but it's okay. The Chinese were actually talking about coming up with another currency, world currency, other than the dollar.
Now, why is that?
Well, they're a little nervous about their investment in the United States.
But how does a global currency hedge that?
There is no other currency. I mean, even the dollar is used in drug deals around the world, so we're used legally.
Then you know you're good. That's even better than petrodollars, drug cartel dollars.
But they're nervous. And all during the 1990s, to show you how the world's changed, I went to the G8, Group of Eight Economic Summits. And now the big summit's the Group of 20. So basically, we're showing that... the United States is still a premier power, but because of our economic problems, we're not we're not way above everybody else. And since we're, going way into debt, and a lot of that debt is going to China, we're going to listen to the Chinese when they talk. So we're
bonding
the base around the world.
You kind of have to, and I think that the president, listen to this next cut, and talk about contrast between this administration and the last.
I would like to think that... with my election and early decisions that we've made, that you're starting to see some restoration of America's standing in the world. Although, as you know, I always mistrust polls, international polls seem to indicate that you're seeing people more hopeful about America's leadership. America is a critical actor and leader on the world stage, and that we shouldn't be embarrassed about that, but that we exercise our leadership best when we are listening, when we recognize that the world is a complicated place and that we are going to have to act in partnership with other countries. When we lead by example, when we show some element of humility and recognize that we may not always have the best answer.
Robert Gutman, can you translate that statement into "I am not George W. Bush"?
That's a pretty good definition of what you just said. Actually, to be fair to the former president, in his second term, he did have much better relations with the Europeans. So times you know, were better after in Bush's second term.
Mm-hmm. But Obama, he promised a humble. The word humble, obviously, was, you know, because President Bush promised a humble policy, and it was anything but humble.
No, Bush was not humble.
Right, well, it was preemptive strike and the Bush doctrine.
And the Europeans.
For those like, in Alaska.
Europeans like a certain type of American, and people from Texas, they're not used to. I took a group of Europeans to Austin, Texas, a couple years ago, and except for drinking beer, we, you know, that we got along that well. But, you know, it's very different. So
yeah.
Obama, when he was there in Berlin, the Germans loved him. He has a large popularity in Europe. But popularity is one thing, and actually getting the European, like tomorrow, our NATO allies, and today Sarkozy said, we love what you're doing in Afghanistan. We really agree with what you're doing. Good luck. We're not sending any more troops.
Right.
And tomorrow, Obama will be very nice. He's not going to pressure anybody. But basically, the Europeans and other NATO allies are saying, Afghanistan, go to it, America. Go send more troops.
Yeah.
That surge.
So you're saying they may like us better, but we're still carrying the largest burden. We're still the buyer of last resort for all the cheap junk in the world.
They're
and
not.
We got to go fight the hard fights on
right.
the planet.
Some of the troops, Germans, French, are sending troops, but they're sending them to the north of Afghanistan where there's no fighting. So they don't want to send troops.
They're in the bleacher seats. Great.
That's kind of a weird military alliance.
Well, Robert Gutman, thank you for actually indulging in some serious discussion about what happened in the G20. It's great to have people who really do follow everything beyond the labels.
Okay, if you want to talk about Michelle and Carla, we can go into that later, but that's fine.
I'm sure we will. We'll circle around to that. We'll loop back because we're
very
in America.
Good.
Robert Gutman, thank you so much. You bet.
I would like to think that with my election and early decisions that we've made, that you're starting to see some restoration of America's standing in the world.
What do you think about that, folks? Some restoration of our standing? Do you think they'll love us for long? 866-991-9927. Does he have a point? His election alone? What is it going to take to win over the rest of the world? How do you get them to pony up? That's the question on the table next on the Nathan Skinner Show. Like a great soap opera, isn't it? The G20. One of the big soap operas just got canceled. I'm trying to think. Days of Our Lives after Guiding Light. Thanks, John. like I know. I used to watch General Hospital when I was in high school. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 866-991-9927. I should get that out of the way. What else do I need to get out of the way? Programming notes. What other self-promotion and or programming notes? I'm not on TV this weekend, okay? Is everyone happy? I have a weekend to myself. I'm going to actually be hanging out watching the Final Four. So you don't have to get up and you don't have to watch Bulls and Bears or Cashin' In or any other show. I am Facebooking now. Sharon's got me Facebooking. I love it. It's cool. So friend me. I like that. You can talk to me. I'll be doing a little bit of that. And also, it's so funny because I just started Twittering. And, yep, I'm a new Twitterer, and now I'm finding out that Google's in talks, and I might not be able to Twitter, I might be swishering. So I'm a little verklempt about whether I'm supposed to be Twittering or swishering right now, but I'm Facebooking, okay? So, and we're MySpacing. We're doing all those things. Back to the soap opera that is the G20, now that I've gotten through with that. This is pretty funny. On the break, I was watching this video of Queen Elizabeth. She's become a YouTube hit after apparently losing her temper with Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi during a photo call for the G20 leaders. After the photo was taken, Berlusconi can be heard yelling, "Mr. Obama," at the U.S., in order to get his attention, and she yelled at him for being loud and rude. So let's try and, John, we try and see if there you can get that, him doing that. That was pretty funny, if we can pull it up in time. She said, she shrugged her shoulder and said, "What is it? Why does he have to shout? Why does he have to shout?" In my best, oh my gosh, what's the British comedy? It's been a long week. What's the British comedy? Why does he have, how do you pick that up? You know what I'm talking about. The Life of Brian. Quick, John, you know this. Monty Python, there you go. How do you pick that up? What is it? Why does he have to shout? No, she's a queen. It's the Queen's English. What is it? Why does he have to shout? That's a different. They have very different dialects. The Cockney accent there. A Buckingham Palace spokeswoman Friday rejected suggestions the Queen was annoyed with Berlusconi. She told the British Press Association the reception was warm and friendly and said everyone involved was good-natured. It was loud and jolly and very jovial. There were no gaffes and no offense taken. Okay, then. Oh, my. Even the whole speculation that the royals... the whole royal thing bothers me. I just got to tell you that right now. I see people paying attention to the royals, and it bothers me. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. Here's a why did he do it situation. Jibberly Vong, age 42, is the gunman dead in the upstate New York massacre. It is the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. I'm just catching up through the break on the latest details. My head's spinning a little bit, just comprehending this. This is in upstate New York, Binghamton, New York. I've actually done a morning show from the local affiliate there when I was a morning host. And here's what CBS is reporting right now. It was not a hostage situation as we first heard or learned or thought. It's always tough to report these things in real time. He had been just let go from a job at IBM. This was the home of IBM, where it was the birthplace. And let's see, let me just give you the details, because I'm thinking, I'm trying to figure out why he chose this particular American Civics Association. A gunman opened fire at an immigration services center in downtown Binghamton on Friday, killing 13 before taking his own life. It's being described as a classic spree killing, according to CBS News correspondent Bob Orr. Law enforcement officials say the gunman died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The rampage began when he barricaded the rear door of this building with his car before entering through the front door and then firing his weapon. Orr said a senior law enforcement official told him that after he entered the building, he shot the receptionist in the head and killed two others at the front desk. Officials said the receptionist had played dead after being shot, heroically called police before she apparently later passed away. Imagine the pain of that woman's family. She lived to call the police and stop 30-some people escape that building. And she was shot in the head and called the police, and the SWAT teams emerged, and then she died. Can you imagine that family's pain? I mean, there's this pain that she didn't survive, but that is heroic to have the wherewithal to play dead and make that phone call and save all those other lives. The official then said the gunman went to the southwest corner of the building where citizenship tests were being taken. Okay? People just going through their test to become American citizens. There he shot 11 and then killed himself. Others in the building hid and barricaded themselves before the SWAT teams arrived. 37 survived the attack. The official said the gunman, he had two guns with him, a 9mm with an extended clip and a 45mm. He didn't take hostages. He just went in. He had survival gear, extra ammunition, and a hunting knife. That's weird. That would suggest that he planned on trying to escape if he had that kind of gear. He was identified with the name Jiverly Vong, age 42. It does not in this story say, if you know, have details, if you've heard, what his, if he was an American citizen, if he was an immigrant, if he had taken the immigration, if he had become a naturalized citizen. But what really struck me in this piece is that people were there taking, they were in the process of taking their citizenship test. It was in the middle of a test. He just went in and opened fire. The police called the phone number that he was listed at, and his sister answered, but she said how, when they told her, described it, she said how he didn't have a gun. Someone must have else been involved. They obviously, you know, were surprised and shocked. So this American Civics Organization is an organization that helps immigrants in that area with naturalization applications. Tell me this. Why do you think he did this? I, you know, as we talk about, it's interesting coming off this discussion with the what's going over in London, the G20. I was thinking during the break myself, you know, there's got to be, he loses his job, okay? This is a human experience. Losing your job, having financial anxiety is a human experience. It's not, it has nothing to do with your nationality, your country. And to choose to go in and to execute people who are becoming citizens. There's a thought process. There's some twisted something going on in this guy's head that led him to that location. I don't know. No one, I haven't heard yet if he had, you know, been a part of this organization, if he had been helped by this organization, if they, you know, he feels like they didn't get him a job. None of those details we know. But I know this. In thinking about this and trying to figure out this why this guy did this, you know, we look at I'm a great example here. I often talk about, you know, my identification. We identify with things. I'm from Detroit. I'm proud of saying that, right? My automakers, I stick up for them. I'm a U of M Wolverine, go blue. I'm a rah-rah American. I just had this conversation with John about how he said, you don't like the Royals, do you? Off the air. And I said, you know, I'm not big on Royals. No. And I'm actually, you know, I'm English, but I'm not into the whole Royal thing. And, that's not that I'm anti-European. It's I just think that we're all human. And so when you start to put a class of people above another class of people and say they're Royal or they're better or, you know, America's better, or when we start to talk about, you know, God blessing America, you know, I know we use that phrase, but God loving or preferring or God willing anything. God doesn't will anyone to die, first of all. So it, to me, these things, maybe you can help me make sense of this. I think that if we just started identifying, as President Obama said at the summit, at the G20 summit, when he talked about historic cooperation, imagine this. I mean, the world is getting smaller. Those lines are blurring, people, between Royals, non-Royals, putting your arm around someone, and she's shouting at Berlusconi because he was a little too loud, the Queen of England. I'm sorry. You know, everybody is human. And I think we've spent way too much time identifying with these labels of who we are. Even right and left. Okay, I know that's going to upset a lot of folks, but even for those of, and I'm a Democrat, I use that label. I absolutely believe in these policies. I'm an environmentalist. There's another label, but sometimes our labels are useless in the face of stuff like this. Because this, something went haywire with this guy, obviously. My guess is, and I'm sure we'll find out details, my guess is that he lost his job. Mental instability combined with anxiety compounded across the globe. Today's jobs report, which I know I have decidedly not focused on Friday. Bad report that came out today. Unemployment at 8.5%, 633,000 jobs. And these are not just numbers. These aren't just statistics. With all of these people losing their jobs, there is stress, there's anxiety. There are desperate choices being made in households. And there are people on the edge like this. That's enough. That's enough to make them snap. And they've got to blame somebody. I mean, that's my guess. This is just guessing. But obviously anyone who does this has some sort of mental problem. There's a serious mental issue going on. You don't commit suicide. You don't kill other people unless you have a very serious and untreated mental illness. But nonetheless, I'll tell you, that's why it's like Glenn Beck and these tea parties and stuff. That does scare me a little bit. It does. It really does, because we're going through some tough times here. We are certainly dark clouds. President Obama made no allusions to that things might get a little worse before they get better. You got to have both hope and keep your head about you while you're going through that. So we'll get more details on the other side here. And if you have thoughts on why this guy did it, or if you know more than I know, then feel free to call 866-991-9927, 866-991-9927, right? That's it until we get our new number. So, boy, I'd like to say it was all just fun on a Friday and that we could just all have fun and laugh at the fashion smackdown and all this stuff. But life does go on in this crazy world of ours, and the good and the bad. And today certainly marked a sad day for those people in New York. So we'll get more information coming up. What it is, fragile. Well, I guess we get reminded of that every single day. Yet today, another bad news day here at home, even as we hear some good news abroad. Jiverly Vong is the name of the shooter in upstate New York at the Immigration Service Center, where 13 are among the dead, and I think that includes the gunman. I'm also hearing that he was a local man, but of Vietnamese heritage. And went in, obviously, with every intention to kill, because he blocked the back entrance to the car. He had a couple of guns, a hunting knife, and shot several people in the head. We'll get more details on that. Here's my question as I think about, like, what this immigration, it's this, the American Civics Association, and these people were taking their test to become American citizens. And, you know, you can't, it's hard to get inside the head of somebody who's going to do something like this, because it's insane. It's an insane act inherently. But the question is what, you know, that immediately comes to mind is why? I know he lost his job at IBM. We know that much. But, what more can you gather from those facts? Maybe that's the best way to ask the question. What more can we gather? The officials are going to have to start to piece this together. 866-991-9927. Tony is in Los Angeles. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Yeah, that just blew my thesis or my theory out of the water. I didn't know he was a Vietnamese immigrant. But, it's frustration. he's probably angry and he wanted everybody to feel his pain, it sounds like. And sadly, he had to take it out on other people.
So you thought, oh, you didn't know that he was...
I didn't know he was a Vietnamese immigrant. But
right, if he was an American and someone who's... Because of all this, it's this anti... this immigrant bashing that goes on constantly,
yeah.
It was a big part of the election, was a big part of Lou Dobbs' nightly rant, I must say. This anti-immigrant, almost fear-based bashing of immigrants. That was my first thought as well.
But
Tony, he's not. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
all right. it.
Enjoy your life. You got a wife, Tony?
No, I don't.
Well, you go find one. You go. You gonna watch the Final Four?
Say what now?
You gonna watch the Final Four?
Yeah, I might get a little bit of that.
Well, good. You better make sure you have a good weekend. Enjoy a little of your life, okay?
You do the same.
All right, Tony. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Tess, who is in Burbank, California. Hi, Tess.
Hi. Yeah, I'm an IT professional. Just got laid off Tuesday. So, and as you look out on the sea of the employees on your floor and like, I was one of three American-born people. But I had a lot of friends who were from India, Pakistan. And when you hear about how bad it is, and especially Pakistan, but they come on the H-2B visas, and then your job goes away. So if I understand that poor man's frustration and anger, but I have a little, you know, sanity block in me, so... I'm not going to go out and shoot people.
Yeah. Obviously, that's an act of an insane person. But you're saying that the IT jobs, you work at a big like a hardware company, software company,
internet,
and so who are the technicians that are getting these what's it called again? The H-2B visas, right?
H-2B. It's the foreign workers visas.
I know, but I understand what those visas are, whatever the name of them is.
Right.
I don't recall. But the idea that here's what's always bothered me about this, is that the idea that we don't have engineers that can fill those jobs that have the technical capability given our educational system, and that we have to import folks to fill those. That's the whole premise of that visa, that particular visa.
Right. Or conversely, send it overseas. You know, my job went overseas.
Well, yeah, but that's generally done for cheaper, just cheaper labor.
That's true.
They generally just, they can, because an engineer in the United States might make they make about $60,000 over there, or we make about $60,000, I'm trying to remember my numbers from the campaign, and they make far, far less for the same job overseas.
Right.
But they probably make less here, too.
Yes, they do, and another hitch is, if somebody with a foreign worker's visa gets laid off, they're screwed. There are a lot of people shaking in their boots.
Because they lose their license to be in the United States?
Correct.
That's interesting. That may have been the case here we don't even know if he's a citizen or not. I mean, I guess we're speculating here.
No.
If he was a foreigner and you lose your visa, you're going to get, you would be deported, but your inclination would be to try and evade the authorities and stay in the United States.
Or find another job before you get terminated. You do have a period of time.
Yeah, but probably in this economy, that's not easy to do.
It isn't, discovering.
So what are you going to do, Tess? So what, are you a software engineer?
I am a a systems engineer, yes, but I'm not one of the super programmer people. So, my hand was involved in the backside of all of that, in applications and stuff like that.
So, how'd you get laid off? How did they actually, so many people are going through this. If you don't mind, Tess, because I'm getting this jobs report. Did you get a letter? Did your boss call you into your office and say, Tess, I have some bad news? What happened?
I walked into work. I was led to a conference room. My manager said, "Your job has been removed. It's no longer there." And I sat there and I said, "Just me?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Okay." I packed up my desk and walked out.
Did you get a severance package?
Yes. but I had just turned 57.
Well, so do you think that's an issue? You're worried about that then?
Yeah, of course I'm worried about that. I think anybody over 50 or 55 in IT world is worried about that. Yes.
So are you married?
No, no.
So you went home. Who'd you call?
I immediately
Who was the first person you called?
I immediately went on Facebook and posted on my wall and told my friends, and I was on the computer till 8 o'clock at night.
You didn't call a girlfriend to go out and have some cocktails?
No, I didn't think it was a good day to go drinking.
Oh, well, you know, sometimes that's when you need your buddies. We call it herding in my family. We get together and we herd. Well, Tess, keep us, you know what, I really want to, you, what you're saying is about your situation is something that people are experiencing across America and the world, actually. So I appreciate you sharing it with us, and keep us posted. Will you call in and let us know how you're doing? We want to make sure you're okay.
Oh, I will.
You will be okay. Keep a positive attitude. I'll tell you this much. I will end on this note, Tess. Keep your head about you. Keep a positive attitude. That's the worst thing you can do, is let it get you down into that vortex. I know it's hard. It is. But you just got to buck up. Think a good thought. Change your thought when you've got that bad news. Think of what you really want to do, Tess. Maybe your passion is out there, and this is your opportunity. Think long and hard about that, honestly. I know that's harder. It's easier to say than do, but I believe it in every fiber of my being. And with that, I'm going to go watch the Final Four in Detroit and have some fun this weekend. You'll be all watching my city. We'll talk about it on Monday. Have a great weekend. Thanks, Kim Sherman.